I was reminded this week of the first time I ever came to Chicago. I was in seminary and had come out for a symposium on science and spirituality put on by McCormick Seminary and the University of Chicago. I was presenting a paper on mental illness and the image of God, and how the church needed to affirm this beautiful doctrine of our faith, that every person is inherently a bearer of God's own likeness, in order to offer a measure of healing and wholeness to those suffering from psychiatric disorders. The conference and my paper presentation had gone well during the day, and I decided I didn't really want to pay $50 for some conference dinner with a bunch of people I didn't know, so I thought I would go out and explore Chicago and find something to eat. Now, little did I know that there really aren't a lot of restaurant choices in the immediate walking vicinity of that area of town. So before long, I was just walking down random residential streets in search of something to eat. I started walking down one street and noticed a clearly mentally disturbed homeless man looking in all the car windows parked along the street. I started to do what I think most people would. I went across to the other side of the street, and he saw me and yelled out in a loud voice, "Hey man, give me some money. I need to buy some dinner." I tried to ignore him, but he yelled out again, "Hey you, give me some money or I'm going to break this car window." I didn't want him to damage anybody's car, so I said, "Look, I don't have any cash," which was true, "but I'm looking for a sandwich too. Let's find a place and I'll buy you dinner." As he came up to me, I could see that he had been on the streets for a long time. He was weathered, not just his clothes, but his skin and his hair. But I couldn't look him in the eyes, not because I was physically afraid of him, but because he was desperate and needy. Those are two of the worst things you can say about a person in our culture. Like, "I would never hire him, he's just so desperate." Or, "We used to be friends, but she was so needy, I just cut her off." He had been treated as less than fully human for too long, and it had created a deep hole in his soul, a lacking that you could feel in his presence. I didn't mind giving him some money, but I was at a low point in my own life, and I feared that if I looked him in the eye, that somehow his desperate neediness would take more from me than I had to give. So we just walked on, and we found this little sandwich stand with nowhere inside to sit. So he ordered, and I told him he could get some extra food, and they were clearly upset that I had brought this person there. We got our food and went to sit on the curb to eat. And for the first time, it occurred to me, and I said, "What's your name?" He looked up, and we finally made eye contact. He had soft blue eyes that didn't fit with his weathered appearance. And he said, "Robert, what's yours?" And that started us talking. He told me a long story full of terrible circumstances, poor choices, and worse luck. There were themes of racism, isolation, and a discourse on how it's helpful sometimes for people to think you're a little crazy if you live on the streets. And then he asked me, "Can I get some other things I need?" His earlier demand had softened into a request. His desperation had become a little bit more like hope. I said, "Sure," and we went into the CVS. A manager type followed us around the whole time to make sure he didn't steal anything. At one point, he picked up a package of white athletic socks, and with a look like a kid on Christmas, he said, "Can we buy all of these?" It was late fall, and I had learned why they called it the Windy City as we walked down those wind tunnel streets. And I saw that his shoes had holes in them, and I understood and said, "Yes, we could buy the socks." He was so proud walking up to the counter because this time he would be waited on and his stuff would be bagged properly. When we came out of CVS, he asked me where I was headed. And I told him I was staying at McCormick Seminary. He said, Oh, I like it there. They let me sit in the chapel and talk to Jesus sometimes. And then, without any sense of irony, he said, I'll walk you back. You really shouldn't be out here by yourself at night. I would have been lost on my own, but he gave me the gift of his presence on the way back. And we shook hands and left like two human beings having a normal interaction. In today's gospel story, Jesus is confronted by the needy and the desperate. The passage says Jairus falls to Jesus' feet and begs him repeatedly, needing him to heal his daughter. And the afflicted woman risks everything in a desperate attempt to steal a touch of his cloak and be made whole again. Jesus is not threatened by this desperate neediness, as though it will take too much from him. What he's threatened by is the idea that these two people might be dehumanized, that after an encounter with him, the full potential of their humanity might be left lacking. For the God who came into the world to redeem and restore humanity, that would be the ultimate failure. And so it wasn't enough that the woman was healed and stopped bleeding. Jesus needed to stop everyone, search her out, and in the midst of the crowd, honor the faith that made her a remarkable human being, so that they would all recognize her as someone that the Creator of the universe would care about, someone who the Christ would look in the eye and say, "They won't record your name, but daughter, you matter to me." And while he was doing that, the mourners came and said, "Don't bother the teacher anymore. Your daughter is dead." But Jesus needed Jairus to understand she's not a lost cause, and I won't write you off. You're worth my time and energy because your love is beautiful and right and profound, and I'll save your daughter. And at the end of it all, Jesus instructs them to tell no one, which is ironic because Mark records the story to tell everyone. I think what Jesus is doing here is saying, I don't need you to sing my praises as a miracle worker. I need you to tell the story of redeemed humanity, because that's the work I came into the world to do, and it's important to me. The Christ did not come into the world to make himself greater. He was already God. He came into the world to restore the dignity of humanity. Not just to recognize the dignity of every human being, but to respond to it, to restore it where it was lacking, and to reaffirm it always. Robert had a story to tell, and it was worth listening to. The hemorrhagic woman had a faith, and it was worth lauding. Jairus had a love, and it was worth rescuing. Those are the things that Jesus cared about far more than his own glory. Some of you may know that the general convention of the whole Episcopal Church is going on this week. And there's been a lot of talk there about the fact that we don't talk enough about Jesus. And maybe that's why we're shrinking as a denomination. But I think our problem is that we don't live enough like Jesus. That we don't carry on Jesus' work of redeeming humanity often enough. Jesus will be fully God whether we tell his story or not. Jesus doesn't need anything from me and you in that way. But there are people perishing because their humanity isn't realized, because their dignity isn't fully recognized. And that's a danger to the gospel. It's not that we need to care more about Jesus. It's that we need to care about the things that Jesus cared about more. That's why our baptismal vows, the initiation of every Christian, ends with this question: and will you respect the dignity of every human being? Because at the end of the day, our witness to the world, our proclamation of the good news of Jesus Christ, will rise and fall on whether we can embody Christ in that action. Let our response always be, we will, with God's help. Amen.